Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Steve Jones Show on a Tuesday. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve will soon be there from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, lots of pre-owned inventory. An excellent service department and sales staff. And, of course, they are home of the repeat customer, whether it's buying an new or pre-owned vehicle, whether it's coming in for some service. That's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Our buddy Alex Kozora from SteelersDepot.com back with us today at 3:35. He was at the Senior Bowl as well a few weeks ago, so we'll get his thoughts on that, and also, of course, the Combine coming up starting this week. Got an up-close and personal look at some of the top prospects there. There are lots of Penn State prospects there, so we'll pick his brain about that at 3:35 today. And we'll get to the MLB negotiations in a second. We'll keep an eye on that. We have the new 5 p.m. deadline before games are canceled now, self-imposed by Major League Baseball after how things went yesterday. But do want to give a shout-out, of course, to the Bucknell men's basketball team. They are the ninth seed. They'll take on Lafayette tonight in Easton for the 8-9 matchup in the first round of the Patriot League tournament. March Madness officially beginning tonight across the valley, so you can tune in at 6:30 with the pregame, 7 o'clock tip-off with our buddy Doug Birdsong on the call over on 100.9 The Valley. So we'll see what the Bison can do now. It's been a tough season as far as the regular season goes, but they've ended on a high note. They've won two out of their last three at home. Of course, you had the big win against Lafayette in overtime with Andrew Funk with the big game winner with 5 seconds to go in overtime at Soica a couple weekends ago. That was pretty exciting. You got the nice win to wrap up the regular season on Senior Day against Boston U. And I will see what can happen here. That's the beauty about March Madness is you can have as good or as bad a regular season as you can, but it all doesn't matter when it comes to this time of the year. If you get hot at the right time, if you're playing well at the right time, you can wind up in the big dance. So we'll see what the Bison can do. And they would have played either Lafayette or Holy Cross, and I think Lafayette is the better matchup for them. They split the regular season series with both Lafayette and La Crosse, losing in overtime to Lafayette at Lafayette earlier this season, but also beating Lafayette in overtime, as I mentioned. And road teams won in the Holy Cross series this year. But I just think Bucknell can match up a little bit better with Lafayette after seeing both teams here. But we'll see. If Bucknell can rebound and play defense consistently, can find key shots at the right time, all have been Achilles' heels this year, then yeah, they'll definitely have a chance. Have been great on the road this year, but again, it's a new season. Anything can happen. So we'll see what happens tonight over on 100.9 The Valley. 6:30 tip-off, or 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock tip-off, Bison and Lafayette Leopards. Other game tonight is Holy Cross and American in the 7-10 matchup. Should Bucknell win tonight, they would be at Colgate for the quarterfinals on Thursday and have yet another postseason matchup in Hamilton, New York. Of course, losing to Colgate last year in the semis. So we'll see what happens there. Now to the MLB negotiations. I tweeted this out this morning. I was actually pleasantly surprised that things have even gotten this far. But I'm also thinking to myself, better late than never, but why this late after negotiations go into the wee hours last night?
To be honest with you, you think it's going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen either now, especially...
They lost momentum last night. This is what happened. They got to 2:25 in the morning, and the owners did want to keep going. They felt like they had it, and the players wanted a break. And when they came back today from the break, the tone was different.
Yeah, I honestly don't think they're going to get it done either. And I think, again, this was all a sham just for a PR perspective from the owners.
No. That part I don't think you have right. I think they were close last night. I do. And what happens is that, okay, the players wanted a break. The owners wanted to finish it last night. Well, then you get the break. Some of the players start talking to their agents. And it does change things. That's one of the reasons why they wanted to finish it last night. I don't think this is a sham. I think that they were close, and now they aren't, because after everybody went to their corners to talk, they came back and... Now, they look foolish. In the backdrop of everything that is happening in the world right now, how foolish do they look?
It'll just be another colossal failure to Rob Manfred's plate.
But for everyone, it's the players, too.
They definitely get some blame.
It takes two to tango on these things, okay? There are too many Harvard guys in the room and not enough baseball people in the room. Okay? Too many know-it-alls in the room. I know everything. Well, to be honest with you, you really don't know what I know. So really, why don't you just go back and, do some calculus? And that's a big problem. That's a huge problem. You have to have people that run organizations in sports have to have two elements to them. They have to have a business background, because it is a business. And they have to have a sports background, because it's a sport. And you've got to be able to take both into play as to how you're doing it. And there's a certain instinct to each that you need to have, and the really good ones have it. Right? So I'll give you a good example of somebody that's like that. The late Dave Montgomery. Why is Dave Montgomery beloved by everybody? Why? The late Dave Montgomery was beloved by everybody. I mean, even you as a Yankee fan appreciated him. Right? And for goodness sakes, I mean, listen to Chris Wheeler talk about Dave Montgomery. Dave Montgomery knew baseball, knew sports, and he knew his business. Okay? Gee, what a novel concept. That's why everybody respected him. He also knew how to treat people. Now, your guy, Steinbrenner, right? Yeah. Remember, I grew up along a Red Sox fan, right? But Steinbrenner, okay, he let his emotions get the best of him at times. Right, which was always an issue for working for him, because he'd get emotional about things, all right? And sometimes he had to reel his emotions in. But Steinbrenner knew sports, and he knew business. And he knew New York. He may have been a Tampa guy, but he knew New York. He knew you cannot put out a mediocre product in New York. It had to be a dynamic product. It had not just a winning product, but a dynamic product. And when he had to shift gears and change how the product was presented, hey, George, we got to do better with our farm system and so forth. Great, okay, well, let's draft a Derek Jeter. Let's draft a Jorge Posada. Let's get a Bernie Williams. All guys that were lifelong Yankees, he did. But Steinbrenner knew business, And he knew baseball. And he knew his market. Oh, and by the way, generous is all get out. Every year the Red Sox do something on their radio network where they take a game and the entire game is based around the Jimmy Fund. And the Jimmy Fund is the Dana-Farber Institute, pediatric cancer. All right? Guess who one of the top donors was every year that would call in and make his donation?
Well, it was the boss.
George Steinbrenner. Okay, you know, those are the people that you need at the table that love the sport, understand the business, right, and realizes how it's supposed to work. Okay? Now, again, he would get too emotional, which would that's the reason why people sometimes wouldn't run through a wall for him, because of his emotions. Not because of his business sense, not because of his baseball sense, but because he would let his emotions get the best of him at times. Okay. But you have to have people like that at the table. Rob Manfred's a lawyer. He's an attorney. Now, attorneys, look, when you need an attorney, they're great. So please, this is not anti-attorney. This has nothing to do about, oh, they're going to pick on attorneys. No, 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 no. Listen to what I'm saying. It is a baseball negotiation. You need an attorney to put the agreement to paper. That's the key right there. That's where the attorney comes in. But the actual negotiating between the two sides has to have people who have a feel for the business, a feel for the sport, and what's best for everybody involved. That's what you need at the table. Okay? I'm going to give you an example here. I got to find this. To show you how absurd this is not going to be. It's not going to be a baseball reference. But listen to this. This is actually the WNBA. The New York Liberty got thrown into the WNBA's penalty box for having the audacity to provide their players with better flight accommodations. Sports Illustrated reported that the Liberty were fined $500,000 for breaking league rules for providing the team with a charter paid by Joe and Clara Wusay. A team trip to Napa also was deemed an impermissible benefit. Can your owners do this? Liberty star Sabrina Ionescu asked on TikTok. Well, the problem is that the collective bargaining agreement between the WNBA and its Players Association prohibits it. Okay? So what were they threatened with? They were threatened with, A, having every draft choice taken away. Then they knew they couldn't do that. Suspending the ownership of the team or terminating the franchise. Really? Well, in the end, they were fined $1 million. $500,000 ended up being the number after an appeal. Now, I don't care about the fine. The fine is irrelevant to me because all the fine money goes to charity. Just so everybody knows, every time you see a player fined or a franchise fined, the money always goes to charity. Right? So that, okay? So I don't care if they fine them $1 million or $500,000. Imagine the gall and the audacity of an organization to say to their players and their employees, gee, instead of going during COVID, no less, we're not going to have you go through the airport. We're going to take you over to Signature and send you through the FBO and the charter area, and we're going to fly you first class from here, from point A to point B without a stop in the middle. Imagine that. I mean, imagine the gall of that organization. Who the hell want to work for them? Oh, and take the other employees with you. Oh, and by the way, we're going to do a side trip to Napa. Now, which organization are you going to run through a wall for, the Liberty or the WNBA? What's interesting about this story is is the WNBA comes out looking like a Bush league. How about that? That's absurd. I know it's a brokered agreement. I got that. But my goodness. They try to do something first class for their employees, care enough about their employees to do something like that. You're darn right the people look around and say, this is awesome. Right? Well, guess what? That's part of ownership, is this is awesome. Yeah, everybody, you know, you guys hear me talk about Roger all the time, right? You talk about Roger in glowing terms, because guess what? Okay? Roger Haddon is awesome for this guy to work for. Because that's how we get treated. First class all the time. At least that's how I get treated. I'll speak for me, all right? I read that. That's crazy. I mean, that's insane. Now, I mean, can the Say family afford it? According to Forbes, they're worth $8.7 billion and have a $157 million condo in Brooklyn. The $500,000 they paid in a fine to the WNBA might be what he gives the Uber driver when he's done. Even though you're not supposed to tip Uber drivers. How galling. They bought the team for $10 to $14 million. Now, the cap, the WNBA salary cap, is $1.3 million. Okay? Okay. Now, they don't play as many games either. I read that story, I thought, okay, here's the Liberty trying to treat their team like a first-class organization, and the WNBA looks like a clown show. Matt was all fired up about this story earlier in the day.
No, I totally agree.
You didn't know about it until I just read it. It's like working with Suit Jr.
You know why? That's the WNBA in a nutshell.
Suit Jr. It's like unbelievable. No, but I mean, but you're right. I mean, it makes them look like the Liberty look like a first class organization. WNBA looks like a Bush League. Crazy. Yeah, well. According to SI, about half the league's teams are profitable. That's good news. That's better than I thought. There's somewhat of a divide between old guard owners and new guard ones, like the Say's, who own the Brooklyn Nets, and Mark Davis, who owns the Las Vegas Aces, who own other professional sports teams and appear to be flabbergasted by the constraints on player amenities. I mean, the two of them are looking around going, yeah, but this is what we do in other leagues. It's like, let's get a charter. Oh my goodness. During COVID, I didn't have to send my players through the terminal. Oh, really? Didn't have to change planes. Oh my goodness. And you wonder why you have a problem. You wonder why you have a problem. Oh, well. Great to be here today. Matt, you got what? Bucknell tomorrow? Women's game?
Yep, regular season finale tomorrow against Colgate.
Nice. Good.
Men begin their quest for a Patriot League championship tonight at Lafayette. First round.
The men do tonight.
The men do tonight, yep.
Tonight, okay.
7 o'clock over on the Valley.
Okay. Now, Doug will do that one on radio, right?
Doug will do that one from Easton.
There you go.
Bucknell wins. They get to go back to Hamilton, New York. for the second straight year.
There's nothing like being in Hamilton in March. A message from this station and the Hamilton, New York Chamber of Commerce. All right.
I still have never been, but I've heard stories. That's all I can say.
It's not, as it gets smaller in your rear view mirror, it gets nicer. What?
That's pretty much what I've heard.
Can you come up with the jokes on short notice like that? Come on. Come on. Can you come up with the one-liners like that that fast?
No, you're pretty good. That's another hidden talent of yours.
It's like a coal mine. It's hidden. All right. We got a whole bunch of commercials, news, whatever, blah, blah. State of the Union's tonight. That'll be great. Are you going to watch?
No, I'm watching Bucknell tonight.
I got Wisconsin and Iowa tonight. I'm sure I'll get the highlights of that.
Yeah, same here.
I don't get why Wisconsin's this good. I watched them in person. I still don't get it.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. It's 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. You know, it's, if I could pick anybody that would come on the show and see things the way I do about you.
I've said before, I feel like I'm still doing the show with this guy back in our college days sometimes with you.
Alex Kozora, Steelers Depot, understands that you have enough traits of anger and suit in him. Alex, welcome, and I just would like to point out that I thank you for your service earlier in life that got Matt through.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. When I used to do a draft show in our apartment at a little table for like 2 hours, so we've come a long way, I would say.
All right, so okay, let's go back to the table for a moment. Let's have some fun here. Okay. So let's go back to the days you're doing a draft show with Matt. Give me a player that Matt was passionate about that was a bust.
Oh, man, that's a really good question. I was listening back to them not too long ago. I was trying to think. Matt, do you remember any particular player that you love? You loved any big receiver.
Basically,
big,
yeah.
Kind of the big, tall guys. Yeah.
Now, the one you're referring to was the 2013 draft. I was huge on Mike Evans. And okay. We did like
that one.
Yeah, you got that one right. Mike Evans is really, really good. All right? I was kind of thinking, like, you know, you'd go with Irv Charles or somebody. What the hell?
No, I wasn't there, but actually, I loved Tre'Davious White at the time, and Alex said...
Now you're just bragging.
And Alex didn't like it, but it turns out I had that one right, so I was doing something right then.
That's not what the segment's about. Alex, what did Matt get wrong? Okay, we're really good at bragging about the one or two we got right. There had to be 72 we got wrong.
Oh, for sure. I'm trying to think. I wish I could give you a name
actually,
right now. But
I know
you're
one.
You're not doing a good job introing me. Go.
I know one. Derek Wolfe.
Okay. You didn't like Derek Wolfe?
Well, no.
He was pretty good, too, though.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I forgot. Yeah. I had said at the time that he was going to be like a first-round pick or something.
For a guy who's negative on the show all the time, boy, you sure are positive about what you do.
next time, Steve, I will bring a list, I promise, of the things he got wrong.
Alex, I need a list. To be honest with you, I can't believe off the top of your head you can't name 20. I mean, you want me to give 20 examples on this show just in the last 3 weeks?
Oh, my.
Matt's just rolling his eyes right now. He said, I don't understand. When I play with my kids, they don't give me a hard time. All right, so they can't talk yet. All right, so... Let me give you three scenarios here that have been brought up in the last, 48 hours. Teddy Bridgewater, Jameis Winston, Mitchell Trubisky. Are any of them, in your opinion, realistic stopgaps for the Steelers if Mason Rudolph is not what they think is the stopgap?
I think all three are. They're kind of that classic veteran bridge journeyman type of guy who's not going to break the bank. You know, quarterbacks still command a decent amount of money in for agency, and with the cap going up, they won't be that cheap. But, you know, we're talking $6 to $7 million on probably a 1 or 2 year deal, which is very much in the Steelers' wheelhouse right now. And I understand any of those guys are not supposed to be long-term future guys and faces of the franchise, and so you have to look at them with that lens in mind. I will say, of that group, I like Teddy Bridgewater the most. I don't get the Trubisky hype. I didn't like him coming out of North Carolina. Didn't do well in Chicago. I get the system, and Nagy wasn't great for him. I'm not sure what 1 year of being the backup in Buffalo changes those circumstances too terribly much. I think people just, you know, you're a year out, you kind of forget about the difficulty in Chicago, and everyone loves the backup quarterback. And so I just can't get on the Trubisky hype train.
You want to know what the hype train is? Out of sight. Out of mind.
Exactly. Yeah. Nobody's, like I said, everyone loves a backup.
Nobody's watched him for a year, right? And you know, it was Josh Allen. I mean, to be honest with you, a show of hands, how many knew he was with Buffalo, right? I mean, seriously, a lot of people didn't realize he was Buffalo's backup quarterback. Look, I know Nagy with the system. I think Nagy's system was fine for Trubisky. It was not fine for Justin Fields. Right, you've got to take advantage of what the skill set of what your quarterback can do, and you can't force him to do stuff he's not good at. And that's where Justin Fields was hurt by Nagy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good point. I get Trubisky, even if you want to look at the system, but it's hard to make a lot of excuses for a starting quarterback, you know, and he had a lot of time there, and it didn't really work out for him. And even with the Bills, he threw 8 passes and threw 1 terrible interception in only 8 passes. And so I just, again, it's not going to be the end of the world. Obviously, he's not the long-term guy, and he's athletic. And every coach, though, thinks they can fix that first-round quarterback, and very few can.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is that if you gave me a choice between Mason Rudolph and Trubisky, I'd take Mason Rudolph. All right. Now, the Steelers, of course, will have the usual back draft. All right. This would be me, Alex, and let me run this theory by you. If I'm the Steeler organization, I'm taking a long, hard look at the quarterbacks in 23 and 24 and start targeting a guy I think I can get out of that. For example, Young and Stroud are both eligible for next year's draft in 23. That's what I would do. I mean, because getting a quarterback in this group, I mean, there's no first-round talent in this group. Mm-hmm. I mean, at all. There's not, the top 32 guys, a quarterback's one of the top 32 guys? No, not with this group.
Sure, it's a much weaker class. There is no consensus quarterback, let alone a real good feel for, you know, what order all these quarterbacks are going to go, the way that you've kind of had at least a general feel for over the last couple seasons. So I get that point, and you're right. You know, if a quarterback's not there, a quarterback's not there, and there are certainly plenty of other needs for the Steelers to address. We'll see how free agency changes some of that, but offensive line certainly could be off-ball linebacker, potentially safety, add some speed at receiver, a lot of other directions this team needs to go. But I will say, you know, even if you assume there's a Young or a Stroud next year, will you be in position to get that guy? Because Pittsburgh's still unlikely to be. Yeah, you won't. And so, like, if you're picking a 20 next year, you're not getting Bryce Young. So it's a tough situation Pittsburgh's in.
Well, that's why, what did I say? I look at the 23 and 24 quarterbacks. Because in 24, they may be in a spot to draft one.
Right, they could be. But then that's even a further projection out, and it just gets really murky from there. Something like 2023 with those other guys, if they're top picks, if they're, you know, top 5 picks, it may be tough for Pittsburgh to be in that position to get one of those guys, because if they're picking even at 15 or 18 or 21, it's going to cost a lot to trade up. So there's a line to walk for sure.
Or 8. I'm telling you, this team is not that good. They could be drafting 8.
Yeah, they could be. They're in a tough AFC North for sure. It's a lot of competition there, but it's just very rare for them to have bad years. The whole Tomlin's never had a losing season. Even in 19 without Ben, they still find a way to go 8-8. So, yeah, I mean, there's a risk there for sure. And there is no slam dunk franchise guy, but I suspect Pittsburgh will certainly explore those options heavily in this year's draft.
Just because he's never had a losing season doesn't mean they don't start happening. Don Shula had losing seasons. All right, so because it's all about talent.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be okay. The Steelers were what were they, 30th in defense last year? Right? Somewhere around there, 30?
Yeah, but I think this defense will be a lot better with the health of guys in 2022. Okay.
They had T.J. Watt and Cam Hayward. Really? Two guys that had their best years that are at the front line of that. There's something wrong there.
For sure. Yeah, it was there was a disappointment, absolutely. But I think what the foundation of this, the defense's issues last year were the defensive line and all the injuries there, and with guys like Tyson Alualu returning, Stephon Tuitt, some optimism that he'll come back next year. I think overall it'll be a more stable situation. But I understand your point entirely, because you don't want to reach for a quarterback this year and be stuck with that guy for 2-3 years when you could potentially improve other things this year and go get that Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, or at least attempt to get one of those guys in the future. It's a really good debate.
But there could be another guy. I'm just saying there are other people, too. It's not always just the first two guys. Last I checked, Patrick Mahomes was not the first quarterback off the board in his draft. All right, so now they go into this draft. The combine, how did the Steelers... I felt the Steelers hit a bad draft patch for about 3 years because they relied on the combine too much. When they got away from the combine and started looking back at them as football players, they started making really good draft picks. But how valuable can the combine be, and is it mostly the interview process or the medical process as opposed to the mumbo-jumbo we see on the screens?
Yeah, you're right, Steve. I think it's largely the latter. It's those things that you can't, you know, find out about a player when you watch him on tape or watch him, you know, in a 40-yard dash. It's the interview. It's the medical. Get to know who these people are as actual people. And then obviously from the medical component, any injury risk, long-term, short-term type stuff, that's all really important that can make or break some players in this draft. But I think for the Steelers, there's still a value in the combine because I know Kevin Colbert spoke about it. It's an even playing field for all these guys. They're on the same track. They're on the same situation. They're in the same environment. And so it's a lot easier to compare guys one-to-one than competition concerns. And maybe if you're a pro day and you're outside versus inside versus weather and stuff like that. So I do think there is certainly value in the combine just being that even level playing field.
What do you take value in? You know, is it the combine? Is it a tape? Is it... I don't know, is it the interview process? Is it pro day? What do you take? You know, which one of those elements, not just one, but elements that you think are important?
Well, the cliche answer is all the above. It's all pieces of that puzzle that come together. But I think the tape rules the day. I mean, that's ultimately the most expansive information you have is a guy's body of work, of his play, not just what he did, you know, training for 2 months to run a 40 and stuff like that. It's what he's done for his 3, 4, 5 years, however long he was in college for. And I think that has to be the thing that drives your draft board. It does for me. You know, who do you want is based majority off of the tape.
All right, so let's get to the draft board. Hey, have you started putting together what you think is a draft board as a starting point?
Started that. Again, the combine will influence that. We have a big board on Steelers Depot that I don't personally write. We have a great writer, Scott Pavel, that does that. He put together his first edition the other day. But for me, in terms of what the Steelers, I think, will do, a lot of it does come down to that pro day circuit and where those guys end up. But certainly we're working towards building that list of names that could really be on the Steelers radar.
In the combine, then, in the combine, what positions are you looking for and what elements are you looking for that you Steelers should be thinking about?
Well, obviously the quarterbacks, but I think everyone understands that. But I think offensive line in particular and just how some of these guys test. And it's not about the 40 for the offensive lineman. Obviously, it's a lot about 10 splits and some of those agility drills and things like that, how they move overall. But I think it'll be really good to watch some of this offensive line class. It's a really strong tackle class overall. The interior lineman, not quite as strong, but there could be some really good guard and center prospects at pick 20 for Pittsburgh, whether that's a Kenyon Green from Texas A&M, Zion Johnson from Boston College, Tyler Linder Bomb from Iowa is the top center in this class. And so if quarterback's not on the Steelers radar for whatever reason at pick 20, I think you have to pivot towards offensive line and start looking at one of those names I just mentioned.
Lindebaum, by the way, is a big-time player, just so you know. Big-time player. Moves well, snaps well, blocks really well, good on run block, pass protection. I've seen the guy on tape and I've seen him in person. See, that's what I go by. In other words, how does a guy look against top-flight competition? I mean, his tens, his shuttles, blah, 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 blah. Guess what? That all comes out during a game. Okay? How did Tyler Lindebaum perform when he was against P.J. Mustipher? Because I know how good P.J. is. Right? If he's holding his own and winning half the time, that tells me he should be in the NFL. If he's not, he shouldn't be. That's my gauge is playing.
Sure.
Right? My gauge is not about oh, look, it's the Underwear Olympics. Fabulous. I really loved how he ran the shuttle. All right, that's just people trying to justify their jobs.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you made a really important point, Steve. It's not just about the tape, but it's about who you're going against. And when you went against the best guys, how did you look? Because when you're in the NFL, there are no days off, there are no plays off. You're facing the best of the best every single time. And so for Rasheed Walker from Penn State, for example, first game I put onto him, how did he do against Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan?
Yes.
And viewed that battle. And so I think that's a really critical point within the tape of who you're going against. Because you're going against a freshman versus a top draft pick, totally different story.
Yeah, no, and that's a good point, Alex, because, you know, in the NFL, you're right. Every single matchup is a son of a gun. I mean, all the time, because you know where I see it? If you go to an NFL game, and you go to them all the time, so I have to tell you, watch special teams. You know what you see on special teams? Everybody can run. Like, holy mackerel. I mean, that's the athletes in the NFL are incredible. And you see it on special teams because it's more wide in the wide open field. There's nobody out there that's out there jogging. I mean, it's all like watching like 11 Macatrillos.
Oh, I got to put that in a scouting report somewhere or something. No, that's a great point. I think the other component of special teams is it reminds you of how good the NFL is, where you're watching the guys running down kicking punts. They were the college stars. Like, Benny Snell was one of the top SEC players in his time, and now he's running down kicks and punts as a backup running back. And so that reminds you about the quality competition and how even the special teamers were the college all-stars.
And then there's another one, too. When you're drafting rounds 4 through 7, do you look at guys, Alex, along the way that not only, how will they fit into the team, but also can play special teams?
Absolutely, because you know those guys around, 4 through 7, even undrafted guys, day three types, they're unlikely to be in a starting role. And so they're going to have to make their, way and climb that ladder through special teams, through getting a helmet. And there are so many stories of that for every single team around the league of guys that have climbed that ladder. So I think absolutely you look at, can this guy play special teams? Has he done it? Does he have the traits to translate and the want to make that adjustment? Because if you can't play in special teams and you're a 4th, 5th round pick, you're not going to get a helmet. You're not going to last long in the NFL.
So in the next couple of weeks, can we get you back prepared with some of the of Macatrillo's greatest hits?
I promise. I will have a long list. I will have a Kyler Murray agent list of names that Catrillo's whiffed on over the years.
Oh, boy.
This is an opportunity, Matt, for the audience to get to know you better.
I thought they knew that already, but, well, actually, there's some things that they could probably find out.
Now, again, Alex and I both understand it's a family show. So, so what do you even say we're going to get to know that well? All right. Alex, you're awesome. It's great. I love the fact you and Matt are such good friends because it allows us to get you on the show. Appreciate you very much.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Matt. Take care.
I found it to be illuminating.
It always is.
I found it to be illuminating.
Yeah, that podcast we did, still on YouTube, and it was almost 3 hours long. We did not expect to go. We were like, half hour. We went on for almost 3 hours. And, those are fun days.
Now, did you guys, for example, then pick the NCAA tournament brackets? Or did you just do football?
Our show was just primarily football, NFL. We mostly did NFL. Like, our thing was the Battle of PA. It was like Eagles, Steelers. We did NFL. Did a little college football, but we did a lot of focus on Clarion, too, because that was our school. So we did a lot of coverage there. A little bit of high school, since we were involved in that our junior and senior years around District 9 there. So we did a little bit of everything, but it was mostly football.
Really? Now, do people call this?
Not many, but we had some people here and there, actually, that would call. And I think we had one Clarion football player that either called or told us he was listening all the time, and he would listen to us every time he would go down to practice. But actually, I'm trying to think. Our final show of the year of our career, we had a couple different people from Pittsburgh and Philly markets call us, which was a lot of fun for us to have in our final show ever on our college station.
And now look where the both of you are.
That's right.
He's with Steelers Depot, and you're in the seventh circle of... No, I'm sorry. All right. Doing this show. All right. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.